Hello, world, and welcome to episode 21 of Cracking the Spine. I'm Sean.
And I'm Zane.
And I'm Josh. Star Trek.
Just kidding. Josh isn't actually here this week.
Yeah, Josh couldn't make it this week. And I wanted to try out my Josh impression.
It was really good.
Thank you.
It was like he was here in the room.
It's a little weird. Like, for so long, the show was just two people, and it felt really, like, natural.
Yeah.
And then Josh got here, and, like, all of a sudden, without him here, it's like, huh. Like, yeah. Not that you're not great.
No, but we love Josh.
We love Josh.
More than we love Zane.
And no. And it's me, too, because I'm a half or a third of this equation.
No, depending it's the on... three of us. We're good friends.
We are good friends. And there's just, like, the weird, like dynamic of all three of us bouncing off of each other. So
don't give him too much credit. We don't miss you, Josh.
But it's just going
to
be... He's
go to hell, Josh.
He's not going to listen. He's not on the show. Why would he listen to it?
He's got so many other projects going on. Hey, find me on Continue Show and Fantasy Fiction.
I'm internet famous.
Josh, if you ever hear this, we love you.
Sort of.
Zane, what are you reading this week?
I am reading The Girl with All the Gifts by M.R. Carey, off of your recommendation.
Okay.
And I'm not very far into it. I had a headache most of the week, so I didn't do a whole lot of reading, but I'm like 150 pages into it.
Okay.
And it's good.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure what it was about. You told me that it was good and
I didn't,
you handed it to me.
I didn't want to tell you what it was about because it's like, if I told you, like, if I said right now what it's about, there's that like automatic block of like, oh, it's one of those novels. Like, I don't want to tell the reader or the listeners rather.
I mean, it's hard to talk about this. So,
like broad
vaguely.
Terms. Yeah.
But, when I figured out what kind of book it was, I had this moment of like, oh.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And you were right. And the book was right, not to be upfront about it, because it is really interesting. And so far, pretty good.
Well, it's a unique take on a genre that has kind of gotten beaten to death in pop culture recently.
Yeah, which is why I sort of pulled back when I realized what it was about.
Yeah.
I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
But I kept going, and it's so far, I mean, I'm only 150 pages into a 400-page book, but it's good, and it's interesting. It's like a quick...
Like, they're good characters. See, I feel like he's created really dynamic characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I like it.
Cool.
Sean, what are you reading?
Well, I finished Tuesday, I finished The Fold by Peter Kleins, which is what I had started last week, which was a science fiction novel most of the way through. Again, I don't want to, because I actually think you and Josh would both really enjoy this book.
Okay.
I was talking about it last week. It's the one about the group of scientists working for DARPA, who in their attempt to create matter transporters end up creating what is essentially a Stargate. It allows travel between two points by folding the time and space continuum in on itself. So it was really good and took a lot of really unexpected turns. And the other thing I really liked about it is that Kleins is a young-ish kind of writer. Like, I would guess probably late 30s, early 40s.
Okay.
And he lives in LA and he writes a lot of comic book stuff too. And without beating a dead horse, it incorporates a lot of pop culture references.
Right.
In a way that is really organic.
Okay.
And like kind of serves the
story. So maybe when you're at like the sci-fi rack in the bookstore and you're at
just go one book over
to Kleins.
Yeah. So the
try
Fold
that one out.
Instead of Armada or Ready Player One. No, it was really good and it took a lot of weird twists and turns toward the end that like really kept it like the last 100 or so pages. I was like, all right, I'm just gonna push through, like not push through, but like I'm gonna get this done because I need to know what happens. So then I started another book. I don't even remember the name of it that had been sent to me,
well,
and I got I got like 10 pages into it, and I was like, nah, this isn't for me.
Yeah,
and I said it was called Scrapper, but I set it aside.
Okay,
and then today I started another book that was sent to me called The Drafter by Kim Harrison, and Kim Harrison kind of writes a lot of like tough girl, espionage, action stuff.
Okay.
And that's what, this is the first of a trilogy with more of a sci-fi twist on it. I'm not convinced I'm going to keep going with this one.
Oh man, two duds in a row?
Yeah.
That stinks.
But I'm kind of glad that I've given myself this permission to like pull the ripcord and go, you know what? Nope. There's enough stuff in the world. So I may actually move on to, a reader had suggested I read Grendel.
Yeah.
By John Gardner. So I think I might get that next. I think if I'm going to give The Drafter a little bit more time, Like, okay. A couple more, you know, I read...
couple more chapters.
I read the prologue and chapter one. And it's well written, but it feels very, like, you know, sexy girl, ultra undercover spy. Yeah, yeah. Like,
that's how I am about, like, mysteries and stuff. I'm like, yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah, it's... I mean, like, cop dramas. It's not bad. It's just not me.
Yeah.
So, so I may go along with a listener recommendation instead. So, yeah, that's... Josh, what are you reading this week?
Ah, I'm reading the internet! Yerp.
I can't actually read.
All right, good, Josh. All right. so, yeah, we're going to take a little break in a minute, and when we come back, we're going to get into the meat of the conversation, which you might want to listen to with the lights on this week.
Oh.
So we'll be right back with at Cracking the Spine.
Let me down the stairs. A strange light filled the room.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you're listening to us on the iTunes or Android marketplace, why don't you go ahead and rate us? Why don't you go ahead and write a review of the show? We'd love to hear what you think. You can also get us on Twitter. We are at Cracking Spine. You can find us on Facebook. Just search Facebook for Cracking the Spine Podcast. And you can email us show. We are crackingthespineshow@gmail.com. So hit us up with show ideas, mistakes we've made, or delicious recipes.
It's burning on some hillside. And we stood and we watched.
Welcome back to episode 21 of Cracking the Spine. We can now legally drink.
Somebody buy this podcast a drink.
I'll buy the drink myself because I'm Josh.
All right, that's enough of that.
Well, I'm still Zane.
I'm still Sean.
We missed that part. And I got excited about our age.
Josh is still gone.
This week we were going to talk about horror books.
Yeah.
And what we consider to be, like, successful horror and our favorite horror. I mean, you and I really, we both really enjoy
reading I love
horror.
A good horror novel. Yeah. And, like, it seems weird, too, because, maybe not. Like, I think horror has gotten this, like, reputation in the mainstream as, like, kind of like a, like, even geekier than science fiction. Like,
is that true?
I don't know. Oh. I feel like
I
that.
I didn't know that.
Like, the horror section in my store is, like, three shelves of Stephen King,
yeah,
and then like some Laurel K. Hamilton, and then like assorted other things, you know, like it's not, I mean, if, you know, I feel like if it wasn't for Stephen King, the horror genre probably wouldn't be as big as it is.
Absolutely not.
Like, who's the next biggest name after Stephen King? Like, H.P. Lovecraft?
Clive Barker?
Right, yeah, and Dean Koontz, like a bunch of people who...
Does he write horror?
Yeah, he does, yeah.
Oh.
A bunch of people who I've read, but like, I'm not going out of my way for.
Okay.
So, yeah, like, right off the bat, like, the king of horror, the king, oh, I didn't, I swear I did not mean that. And he is the king, not just because he's Stephen King, and not just because he sits at the top of the throne, but he has sired the prince of horror, I feel like.
Absolutely.
Joe Hill. Joe Hill's first novel, like.
Dude, Heart-Shaped Box is on the top of my list.
Speaking of successful horror, I don't know what it is about that book that makes it so scary. I was thinking about it earlier.
It's so scary.
It's legit terrifying. Like, it's a character, you know, we're going to do some spoilers in this week, and I'm sorry if that, like...
Yeah.
Like, that's a book that's like, 10 years old.
It did come out a while ago.
I remember, I hate doing this, like, because I sound like I'm bragging, but, like, his editor sent me an uncorrected manuscript of it.
Yeah.
And, to read, and actually, I'm quoted on the bookseller's, like, advance copy, because I read that book, I was riding the train an hour and a half in each direction, and I remember thinking, God, could I just be on the train? Like, never, ever would I say to myself, could I be on the train just a little bit longer? Because an hour and a half on a SEPTA train sucks.
Yeah.
But, like, I would just be like, oh, my, I can't already be here. I'm in the middle of this horrifying novel.
Yeah, well, and that's, you lent that book to me, and I read it on a bus from New York City back to Pennsylvania, and it was nighttime.
Ooh.
And a good portion of that story takes place in the car, like, while they're being pursued.
Yeah.
And it was, like, harrowing to read in that situation, but it was amazing, and it's so rare that you get, like, really actually scared by books. Like, not just unsettled or, like, grossed out, but actually scared.
Yeah, like
you're scared.
I'm jaded, you know what I mean? Like, I've read a lot, and I've seen a lot of movies, and, like, I've experienced a lot of things. So I feel like it's really hard
Just because I like a horror book doesn't mean that it scared me.
Exactly, yes.
So...
And, like, So, you know, just a little bit of background about Heart Shaped Box. It's about this character named Jude Coyne.
Yeah.
Who is like Trent Reznor, Glenn Danzig kind of character, like an aging heavy metal icon in the world of music, who has this like collection of, I don't know, memorabilia, spooky, like spooky memorabilia.
Paraphernalia, yeah.
And in the beginning of the book, he is on eBay and he buys a ghost.
Yeah.
And he gets a box in the mail when he gets it, and it's a man's suit.
It's a suit, yeah.
And then, like, it turns out that the ghost actually does come into his home.
Yeah.
I think part of the reason that it works so well, part of the thing I really loved about it the first time I read it was Jude Coyne is a very believable...
He's very authentic.
...metal
feeling.
God.
Yeah.
Like, a lot... I feel like a lot of authors try to write, like, rock and roll references.
Yeah.
And come off sounding very, like... Like, they had to ask somebody about it, or they had to crib Wikipedia articles.
Uh-huh.
And,
They read too many anecdotes about, like, picking up brown M&Ms and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, trashing hotel rooms and, like, yeah.
Everything they know about rock and roll they learned from Axl Rose.
But, like, Jude Coyne, like, is very authentic. He gets all the right references. Mm-hmm. He listens to the right music. Mm-hmm. He carries himself in a way. And I think that, like, when you start a horror novel before, unless it jumps off from a, like, scary point of view, like, the first 10, 15 pages are really important because you have to buy in.
Yeah.
Like, you have to believe that the world that you're reading exists or is enough like our own world that when things start to go bad, when things start to get scary, you're along for the ride.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, what I really, what struck me about Heart-Shaped Box and something that Joe Hill continues to do in his next two novels, both in Horns and in Nosferatu, is he beats the crap out of his characters.
Yes.
So that lends, like, this level of authenticity to me where I feel like no one is safe. People get really, really hurt. And I just think that that's, for me, it was really effective in a horror novel to know that the main character isn't safe from harm.
Right. Or up until the third act. Like, a lot of times, like, it's third act their character.
It's like usually, it's like peripheral characters who sort of get picked off or picked on.
Yeah.
And Joe Hill beats the crap out of all of his protagonists. And it's great. I really like it because at some point you're like, I don't actually know if this person is safe.
Yeah.
And that puts you on edge. And he did that really well in Heart-Shaped Box.
And he lets his characters, it's the same thing his dad does. He lets his characters, like, the things that are happening to them sort of change who they are.
Yes.
And let you feel different ways about them. Yep. Like, you know, two-thirds of the way through
Heart-Shaped Box,
like, you start off loving Jude Coyne. I think he's, like, cool and a badass.
Yep.
And that, like, this is happening to him because of, like, a fan that's crazy about him.
Right.
Not because of, like, the lifestyle that he's chosen for himself.
Yep.
And then, like, it's revealed that, again, spoilers, that, like, he kind of deserves what happens to him.
Yeah.
Like, he's getting his comeuppance for a debauched life that he's lived.
Yep.
And I think that's really humanizing, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, otherwise, like, because otherwise you have those characters, like, you know, you can start, like, if you, I read another book called The Troop by Nick Cutter that I don't want to say too much about because it deals with a particular animal that you don't like, Zane.
Yes.
But it's like, it's a Lord of the Flies kind of situation where it's a bunch of, it's a Boy Scout camp on an island with their troop leader, and this, like, zombie character shows up on the island and ends up, like, infecting everyone. But, like, you sort of know as soon as you're introduced to the characters before the horror element comes in, like, which kids are going to live, which kids are going to die.
Yeah.
Like, the bully kid is going to die. The nerdy kid is going to live up until the end, and then something's going to happen. Like, it's very see-through.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that said, The Troop was also, like, disgustingly horrifying. I don't know if scary is the right word, but horrifying.
Yeah.
Another book I think of when I think of horror that, like, was successful but isn't necessarily a ghost story is Haunted by Chuck Palahniuk.
Yeah.
Did you read it?
I did.
And so it's about a group of writers that are invited to what they think is a reality television show to write in a home. And it's not a ghost story, and it's not a monster story.
Yeah.
But, like, in a way that only Chuck Palahniuk can do, there's a fresh horror on every page.
Yeah.
Like just...
Well, that's, I was thinking about books that maybe weren't really horror, but were, like, horrifying to read, and that's how I felt about American Psycho.
Oh, yeah.
Which is one of the very few books, like, I finished it, but I had to put that book down, because it, and I'm, like, I like horror movies, I'm not too squeaky about, like, my squeaky stuff is very particular. So, like, but it really, it's, like, visceral to read.
He never turns, Patrick Bateman never turns the never turns the camera away.
Yeah.
He stays through the bitter end of all of his victims and describes
every last detail.
Every last detail of everything, you know, between the suits and the food and the car rides, like, and the Les Mis posters.
It's like one thing in the beginning of the book when you're sort of getting the scope of his lifestyle and he's describing, you know, the restaurants and all that stuff, but then... You know, towards like the last third of the book, when he's describing in detail what he's doing to like prostitutes and stuff, and he's like burning their flesh off. And it's like, there was one passage that I had to put down and like walk away for a couple of days.
I'm almost certain I know which one you're talking about. Is it the rodent, the hamster?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it was, I think I remember it had something to do with like electrical clamps.
Okay. Yep. I know exactly.
And it
what
was
you mean.
Like I was like this, it just went on and on and on and it was really relentless. And that's why it's effective and I get it. Like it's not a criticism per se. And I've never really read anything else like that. But it was it's not a ghost story by any stretch of the imagination, and it's kind of not even horror, except it's
no, it's like haunted. It's horrifying.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
not horribly written, but
no,
like there are just horrors on every page.
Yeah.
Actually, Bret Easton Ellis also wrote a book called Lunar Park that did not get as much press. That really scared me, and it's the main character is Bret Easton Ellis.
Okay.
And it's written like an autobiography of Bret Easton Ellis, but like Pat Bateman is like sort of shows up as like he's stalking Ellis.
Okay.
And then there's this like deranged toy called the Turby. The Turby is horrifying. and that's a legit horror novel.
Yeah.
So like it's not too far afield to think that, you know, Bret Easton Ellis can pull
absolutely
that stuff off.
Yeah.
Stephen King, you know, pick one, you know.
Pet Sematary was the scariest one for me, which I don't think you've read.
Not read, no.
There's something about Pet Sematary that just I think it's like the it is scary. It has, like, legitimately scary moments, and what it deals with is scary, that idea of, like, you know, resurrecting. But it's, like, the desperation that he writes into these characters, which actually I might even say to you, like, now that you're a dad, you might not want to read it.
Right.
But it's, like, that the scenes of grieving, and at the end, you know, the main characters knowing what they know and still doing the things that they do, it's, like, it's gut-wrenching to read, and it stayed with me for a long time. I mean, he has a lot of genuinely scary books. I made the mistake of reading The Shining in a bathtub when I was in high school. so that was really scary. And it, of course, is really, really scary. Some of the scenes, especially the scenes that the kids describe in it. When, like, the leper is, like, chasing them. And so, I mean, that is
oh, God,
horrifying.
I forgot about that until you just said it. Oh my God! That's like, yeah.
Like those scenes, especially
they chase him away from the pipe, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. He's like crawling out from under the house.
Yes.
And like because it's, I think it's because it's written from the perspective of kids. Like in those scenes, it's just so much more. Like you know that terror of like this is probably completely irrational, but it is scaring me to my core.
Right.
But and it's that thing in it where it's like. It is irrational, but also it's not irrational at all because it's actually a thing that's coming after you.
I don't know if you read Duma Key. It's one of his more recent ones.
No,
I would say
didn't.
Within like the past 6 or 7 years. It's about a guy who is disfigured in a construction accident. I think he may lose a limb or two, and he becomes a painter.
Mm-hmm.
And he moves to I think he's from Maine. Surprise, surprise. and he moves to Florida to take up painting and becomes this like. Amazing prodigy, like world renowned, his paintings are selling, and then it just turns into a ghost story, like an old fashioned Stephen King ghost story, and it's scary, man.
Yeah,
like it's like it, there's like these, like he lives on a beach, and there's these like wet footprints that show up in his bungalow, and it's like one of those books where you kind of like I'm gonna set this aside for a little while. I don't need to do this. so yeah, and then like. you know, so what do you think, like, what's your thing in horror? Like, are you a vampire person? Is it the haunted house that gets to you?
I'm not super picky. Vampires generally don't scare me, although, like, those books can be interesting, but they're not scary,
mm-hmm.
and I don't read them, to be scared. Mostly, and, like, even, I like haunted house books, but it has to be the right kind of haunted house book. Like, it's not enough that it's just, like, a ghost story. That's not enough for me. Like, it has to have that unsettling edge in order for me to, like, it's like that addiction of like, oh, I gotta keep going,
right,
and find out what happens. The same reason that you watch horror movies, right, or something. And so there's a lot of books that I read that, like, I would kind of lump into horror, even though they're not really horror books. Like, the one I kept thinking about was We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Yeah.
And it is, again, that's maybe a book that maybe you shouldn't read now that you're a parent. it's really...
Damn, kids ruin everything.
It's really, really, really unsettling.
Uh-huh.
And really scary. Like, the idea of having a completely unlovable child is, like, horrifying. And it's written from the perspective of the mother.
Right.
And sort of how she copes with, like, you not loving this monster that she has brought into the world. Who ends up doing horrible, horrible things. And it's, like, it's not really horror in a traditional sense. It's not a ghost story. And it's about, like, murders, I guess, but kind of in, like a New York Times kind of way. Like,
right. Yeah.
It's not about serial killers or anything like that. But it's so unsettling, and that book, you can't really put it down, and as soon as you put it down, it just, like, you walk away, and it's still with you. Like, it just sits in your gut. It's really effective writing.
Yikes.
But it's great.
That's
it's
how I feel.
Really amazing.
I don't know if you ever read The Amityville Horror, but The Amityville Horror is written, like, I read it when I was young, like, probably before I got into high school, and it's,
I've never actually read that.
It's written like... it was something that actually happened to a family.
Yeah.
Like, their home was actually haunted. And I think, I have this memory of when I read it, I didn't know that it wasn't real.
Okay.
So I was under the impression that, like, that this family really did experience all that,
yeah,
stuff. And I think, you know, going back to the question of, like, what is it, like, that's my thing?
Yeah.
And I think my thing is, like, the thing behind the walls in a regular life.
Okay.
And I think that's something that Stephen King does a lot of.
Yeah.
Like, the idea that, like, just beyond what you can see in your home.
Right.
There's another dimension full of monsters and shadows,
mm-hmm,
and, like, things that are much like almost like a Cthulhu kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, that to view them with your eyes is madness.
Yes.
And I think that, like, you know, a lot of the ones that have come up recently, like, we didn't bring it up tonight, but you and I both read Head Full of Ghosts.
Yeah.
And It.
Yeah.
And Heart-Shaped Box.
Mm-hmm.
Like, very, start off very, like, this is a home, this is a family.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is suburbia. And I think it's, like, that kind of thing speaks to me because that's kind of my experience.
Right.
Whereas, like, you know, vampire story, like, high school romantic vampire stories, or, like, I don't know, like, Black Forest werewolves.
Right.
It doesn't really do anything for me.
Yeah.
A, because, and zombie stories too. I feel like zombie stories, there's only a few that really have gotten to me.
Yeah.
But overall, the genre is like I get more freaked out by, like, the idea of, like, an actual virus story. Like World War Z.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, World War Z is a quote-unquote zombie story, but it's not.
Right.
Like, it's not about the zombies. It's about us. It's about,
yeah,
how we as a species have to deal with it and how we kind of are fucked because we can't.
Right.
So, yeah, like, I think for me to get legitimately scared and, like, ripped,
yeah,
out by a horror novel,
it has to be
novel,
something that's, like, on the, like, periphery of your
of my
human
own
experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can agree with that. I mean, again, I'm not super picky. I try really hard not to, like, pick up a zombie book and be like, oh, I don't like reading about zombies, not my thing.
Right.
You know, because, like, I've read zombies books that are good, and I've read vampire books that are fine, and, you know, like, you know, when you talk about Dracula, like, that that book is weird and unsettling.
Yeah, well, that's a beautifully written book. I mean, because that there's no narrative in that story at all.
Yeah.
It's
It's like, you know, that one does stick with you. But there's, you had kind of mentioned with Dracula, like, are we actually scared by Dracula? Or is it like, you know that you're supposed to be scared by Dracula?
Right.
Like, there's, you know, an attachment to that story.
Right, like,
that
you like, can't,
you
know,
get away from.
It's like the same thing with classics. Like, do we actually like Charles Dickens books, or is it that
are we forced to read them? Or are we even told
that we should like them, right. Therefore we convinced ourselves that we do.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway. I sort of was looking at the horror section earlier today because I worked today, and I was like, I'm looking at some of the others. I'm like, don't know that one. I've never read Lovecraft. I feel like I should.
Yeah.
Like, I know enough of the tropes of Lovecraft. But, like, you know, other than that, like, you know.
What about, like, did you ever read, like, The Haunting of Hill House?
No. Shirley Jackson, right?
Shirley Jackson, yeah. It's considered, like, the Haunted House movie.
I should read that.
Or the Haunted House novel.
Yeah, I should read that.
Some terrible movies.
I think it was made into, like, two or three movies, and I saw one of
them. That
was
the
like,
movie with Liam Neeson.
Yep.
That's considered like it's nothing like the book, that movie. So if you've seen that movie,
I have seen that. I think that's probably why I didn't
worry.
Okay, all right.
It's nothing like The Haunting of Hill House. And also, it's almost exactly the same book. And it's basically like a ripoff, but Hell House is also like a decent haunted house novel. And they're older novels, and they're like, you can see their like roots, you know, when you go back and read them, like, cause you've read a lot of horror. So you'll read these books and be like, I can see where
the other
books that I read
borrowed from these.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what just came to me? Another Stephen King. I hate that week after week, we can't get away from him, but we both love him.
Dude writes a lot.
Yeah. And I read everything he's written. Gerald's Game. Did you ever read Gerald's Game?
No.
Oh man. That is like the closed door murder mystery, but it's not a mystery, like of Stephen King's the story is husband and wife are at like the end of summer in their like tourist, like they're in this town in Maine where they own a cabin, and he, in the beginning of the book, like they're gonna have sex,
yeah,
and he handcuffs her to a bed, and then he has a heart attack and dies.
Jesus.
Yeah. And then it's like, she's there with his corpse on top of her.
Oh my God.
Handcuffed to the bed.
Oh my God.
And the book's like over 200 pages long.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's horrifying.
That's a scary one.
I was trying to think of other stuff that's like horror but not horror. Did you ever read about Shackleton?
Ernest Shackleton?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. We were just talking about him in the store today. Yeah.
That's really scary.
Well, that's real life.
That's real. Yeah. That's what I was trying to think of other stuff that's like actually scared me in Shackleton. I mean, it's awesome, but also it's not awesome.
Right.
It's really scary. That's like reading Into Thin Air.
Yes.
It's like,
or The Martian by Andy Weir, which is going to be a movie now, which is a hard science fiction novel, but it's about a guy getting abandoned on the surface of Mars.
Right.
Like, you know,
yeah,
talk about isolation and like, and Andy, you know, Andy writes it very well. I think there's a few things that could have been massaged a little more, but I'm not an editor. But like, that book sort of like sticks with you.
Yeah. See, that's what I like. I sort of like being unsettled, like getting to the end of the book and being like, oh, and like walking away and like having to like have the book sit on me for a couple of days, like that just heaviness of like it stays with you. I'm like a junkie for that. Books that don't do that, that's fine too. Like, I don't need it in a book, but like in a good horror book, that's what I'm looking for. And if it gets there through zombies or through ghosts or, you know, murderers, that's fine.
It's funny because
as long as it gets there.
The new Neal Stephenson Seven Eves, I read it and I loved it, and like there, you know, the things that stuck with me were like the things about like the future, like the, you know, he writes like 5,000 years into the advancement of humanity,
right?
And some of the technology that comes up, I'm like, that's the stuff that stuck with me. So I lent it to my page. My wife read it, and like, she's reading the beginning, and she's like, this is really good, but my God, is it depressing? And I'm like, depressing? She's like, yeah, the whole human race is going to die. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, that...
that would be depressing.
Because most post-apocalyptic novels focus in on that, like, in a really big way. Like, yeah. It's the family in the prairie that knows that, like, the wave is going to crash over their house. But, like, that's not what... Seven Eves is more about, like, okay, it's going to happen. What are we going to do now? Right. So it's interesting that you can, like, take a novel that isn't necessarily... Or not even a novel, like the Shackleton thing.
Right.
Just a work that isn't necessarily horror, and different people will have, like, that horror reaction to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot of room for interpretation.
Absolutely.
Cool. So, once again, I'm going to toss it out to you, fair listener.
Yeah, what did we miss?
Who have we missed? Because I feel like we focused in on, like...
a couple of authors.
On the royal family, and then, like, two or three other authors. I'm sure there's a whole bunch that we're missing.
Absolutely.
I bet there's some graphic
novels.
And I'm
always looking for suggestions on the horror front.
Yeah.
Tell me what to read.
Zane's going on vacation soon.
And I need books to read.
And she needs books to read. And I don't... My horror books. My horror novel, you know, you can tell, is sort of... is a pinpoint. So cool. We're going to take a little break and come on back to close things out on episode 21, The Legal Drinking Age of Cracking the Spine. The place in heaven's choir, and they fell to the ground, and they set the fields on fire. Welcome back to Cracking the Spine. My name is Sean.
And I'm Zane.
I don't know. Just wanted to try a musical aspect on it.
All right.
Work?
Sure.
Thanks. So yeah, give us what we missed on horror stuff, because I'm
Absolutely.
Sure you guys like stuff too.
We hope.
Yeah.
Have opinions, internet.
And give them to us.
You're so bad at having opinions, internet.
Ooh, wow. Internet, she called you out.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, last week we talked about our favorite childhood books.
Right.
And one of our Twitter followers, at Le Cardex, mentioned that one of his favorite books growing up was Where the Red Fern Grows.
Oh, yeah.
Which we didn't hit on.
We didn't hit on. I read that book. But
I think I had to read it for school.
I think I had to read it too, which is why it didn't stick with me.
That's one of those, like, boys' books.
He also, have to say Le Cardex, huge shout out, because... dude doesn't live anywhere near the shop where we record this store, and he bought a book from my store.
And not only was he just, like, buying books, but he was buying really good books.
He took one of my recommendations, because that's what I do, and he bought Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson.
Yeah.
And, dude, you won't regret it.
So enjoy the shit out of that, because it's awesome.
And when you finish it, I think you got to do Diamond Age next. You know, we got to knock out all the Neal Stephenson
for you.
Pretty
much anything.
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah. Yeah, so again, thanks for the shout out.
Yeah,
you know, thanks
man.
For hitting us up and
And always giving us feedback on Twitter.
Yeah, he liked
That's awesome.
He liked the Ready Player One reading last week too.
Yes, he did. I think everyone did.
And
I really
also heard from Sean, the other Sean, who
we
talked about a couple of times, that he's taking the Ready Player One challenge. He heard us.
Does that mean he has to read it?
He's gonna read it, yeah. He's gonna read it and
like
tell
that's the challenge.
Me and Josh if we're wrong.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
all
remember
right.
We did that like 2 weeks ago? We were
yeah.
like, tell us if you enjoyed it, why we were wrong.
It's just a funny challenge.
So he was like, I got 10 pages into it. I was kind of digging it. And I've had this conversation with like almost everybody who's read it except for Josh feels the opposite of me. Like,
yeah.
Like I'm just too jaded and too cynical.
Yeah.
Which I've heard before. But that book
no.
is that book is shit, so I stand by that book is shit. all right, so yeah, we'll be back next week, maybe
Absolutely.
With Josh. Hey, I'm here right now. I promise we were done with that.
It's
but,
never enough.
So, don't forget to stick around after the end of the show because
oh yes, for yet another
it's
special reading.
Special reading, but this week it's going to be a horrific reading.
Yeah, woo!
I'll give you a little bit of a teaser on this one. There's a book that we've seen in the shop a couple times over the past few weeks that the title of it just really cracked us up. We didn't
yeah.
know anything about it.
We don't. I still have not actually read.
In fairness, like it might be an amazing.
It might be an amazing book. It's no judgment on the actual book.
It's just the title is very funny to us.
Yes.
So while
and I'm pretty sure the reading's going to be funny too.
While we were getting ready tonight, Zane sort of flipped through and found just the perfect passage for tonight's horrific reading. So stick around for that after the end of the show, and come on back next week.
Absolutely.
So thanks for listening from Cracking the Spine. We'll talk more next week. Thank you. gather round now, children, because Cracking the Spine has a spooky surprise for you. It's our very own Zane reading a passage from Andrew Clavin's Werewolf Cop.
Impossible to say in words how difficult this was, what an act of will it required to fight the force of the event. He was becoming so powerful, so quickly, so large in such a little instant, that the very experience of it was enough to destroy his saner self. His substance was morphing into incarnate power, his chest blossoming, doubling, tripling, quadrupling its size and strength. The spikes of fur impaled him from within and burst out into the open with a power of their own. His arms and legs grew so massive in so short a time that the manacles on his wrists and ankles broke at hinge and lock and flew away in pieces. He was free, and the blaze of wild animal passion blew up out of him in an uncontrollable roar that became an uncontrollable and raging howl.
Yeah!
And through all this, he had to fight to retain some portion of that Zack who had looked in the mirror that morning and tied his tie. He was becoming a monster, but battling with all the force of his conscience to hold on to the inner man. I'm not good at being the straight man while we do this. So he changed, but he was still there. He saw what was happening as if peering out from within a creature wholly beyond himself, wholly out of his control. The monk and Satan, meanwhile, staggered back in open-mouthed shock. Satan screamed. The monk let the combat knife slip from his slack fingers. It spun down through the air and bounced on the wooden floor and lay there still. The two killers ran. Satan, his eyes like suns, shot away as if fired from a pistol. But the monk, in his incredulity, staggered back another step and stumbled when he tried to turn. He had to claw the air to get his balance back. He let out a girlish shriek of pure terror as he fought to get his feet under him. Then he motored from a slow, clumsy start into a full escape. All this occurred while Zack was still transforming, while the beast was still bursting through his human boundaries as he writhed and screamed and howled. Then the transformation was complete, and Zack went after his tormentors. He was a cop, and had felt the thrill of the chase before, had forgotten himself and every danger, and even all the common sense and the excitement of running down some alleyway after a hightailing punk. But that was nothing compared to this. When he saw those two hapless schmucks scrambling for the doors, he felt as if some potion concocted of energy, hunger, and joy had come bubbling and snapping and sparking out of his heart to flood through him and commandeer his being. Suddenly, he was chase. He was capture. He was devour. These were all his life and purpose, and they compelled him. His small remnant of Zack's self could only look out helplessly through the wolf's immense yellow eyes as he gave a roar of the purest bloodlust and took off after the running thugs.
Well, children, sleep tight tonight after hearing a passage from Werewolf Cop by Andrew Clavin.